Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I'm joined by my delightful co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Great to be here.
Indeed. Nice to be starting a new month, huh? We are in the month of October, so a new month means a new theme every month. We discuss a new theme, which I would say is a tool. We've been talking about principles that govern our reality and our existence in hopes that as we sort of uncover the depths of these principles, we learn how to use them and use them to have a more sort of meaningful, productive life, find ways in which we can coexist easier, huh, Dorothy?
Absolutely. We could also think of it, Steve, as these discussions helping us actually embrace what our reality is, because many of us have grown up with schooling that we live in a cause and effect deterministic type universe, but we actually live in a probabilistic universe, and adaptability is very relevant to understanding that.
Wonderful. So that, in fact, is the theme of the month, adaptability. So, you know, thus far, listeners, if you're new to Spirit Fire Radio, or perhaps you haven't been with us for all of the months this season, we talked about principles that underlie our reality so far. We talked about interconnectivity. We talked about participation. We had a month on non-linearity, a month on non-duality. We spent a month talking about interdependence, and now we're moving on to adaptability. So, going to be a 5-week month, Dorothy, so we're going to go very deep into adaptability, correct? I'm wondering if you have a quote for us that might kick off the month.
I've got two, Steve. The first one is actually what is said that Charles Darwin actually said, although he's been misquoted, and that is, it is not the strongest of the species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsive to change. So we see the recognition of the importance of adaptability right there.
Yeah, and we hear survival of the fittest, and I think so many people default straight away to thinking that fit means strong, right? Or means intelligent, but actually fit in Darwinian terms actually means the most adaptable or responsive to change. Nice.
Yep. Yeah. The other one, Dalai Lama, he writes, the goal is not to be better than the other person, but better than your previous self, which I really like. It's that whole personal best concept. The negative competitive dynamic.
And one could read previous self into your last lifetime or just yesterday, right?
Absolutely.
We wake up each day, we might consider ourselves brand new, because certainly every day is going to bring something new. And it's how do we adapt? How do we meet those new circumstances that really then tests our capacity to adapt? Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I do love that. You know, I mean, as I mentioned, you know, it's all about coexistence. And I think we still, as just a young species, as humanity, we so often see, you know, we see each other in competition. We see competition celebrated even in our culture. Just we look at sports and goodness gracious. You know, I live in New England where there's a football team, the New England Patriots. It's all of New England and running a retreat center. You should see that nowadays that it's autumn, people rush home because, you know, they've just got to get home to the Patriots. And I think we really are a culture that in many ways celebrates that idea of competition. So nice to be talking about ways in which we can enhance our coexistence.
That's right. And we'll just give a little teaser to our listeners, and that is that next month our topic is cooperation.
Mm.
So you can start thinking about that. But if we think about what adaptability really means, Steve, you know, it's our ability to change easily in order to fit into different circumstances or different conditions, provided those are conditions that is appropriate to adapt to. So there's a flexibility, you know, involved. And to me, a really important component is that ability to learn, to experiment, to try out new things, and to recognize that is how we develop, is through experimentation, through trying things that don't work, trying things that do work.
I can see that it takes a certain level of maturity then, you know, that ability to grow from our experiences. I think in being able to assess and in able to look at ways we responded to situations and assess, was this better for myself? Was this better for the greater good? You know, we're then developing our capacity as well to be the observer and to discern as well. And so, you know, can we be proactive about it all? You know, are we?
Well, I think that...
Oh, go on. Sorry.
That's okay. I think, yeah, that the whole idea of being able to focus on the common good is so important, because adaptability requires us to be able to move beyond attachments that we have to this is the only way, you know, it's my way or the highway kind of thing, but instead... be open to other perspectives, be curious, be interested in how other people view things, and then see if there isn't some way to meet my concerns and your concerns at the same time.
Mm. I have always thought that a sense of wonder and curiosity are just such it's a wonderful way to approach the world. I've always loved those qualities. I've always tried to generate those qualities in myself, always stay curious and always have a sense of wonder. As Dorothy, as we were preparing for the show, I was thinking to myself, well, when in my life was I most challenged to adapt and to see what I learned from that, how I responded, and, you know, what were those circumstances and what did that mean to me? And I was a New Yorker for most of my life, so goodness gracious, anytime you walk out the door, you can certainly know that there are going to be different conditions than the day before because there's so much activity. But my memory went back to a time when I was probably 11 or 12, and in my living room with our neighborhood friends, there were a bunch of guys, a bunch of boys in our neighborhood, and we often would get together on the weekends, and I just so happened to be the youngest of everybody. So there were older teenagers and you know, everybody, I would say, from 12 up to 15, 16, but lots of us. And we were all one day watching Hercules, Steve Reeves. It seemed to always be on Saturday afternoon. And there was an episode with the Amazonians, and all the boys were talking about the Amazonian women and the togas, and they were really kind of going on in a way of desiring these Amazonians. And I, as a 12-year-old, blurted out that I liked Hercules. And I really meant, like, I liked Hercules. And my brother, I have an older brother who later pulled me aside and said, Steve, you know, you have to watch yourself. You can't just say that. You're going to get in trouble. And I remember really thinking about, what does that mean? He said, you know, you just can't like Hercules. And I understood very clearly what he was saying, but it was so natural to me. And I am one who talks a lot and expresses himself sometimes without thinking of consequence. And I understood in that moment that if I wanted to be a part of the group, I would have to cooperate. You know, I would have to sort of adapt to this new knowing that my sort of the ways in which I saw them desiring the Amazonians and the way I desired Hercules were very different, and that there was going to be some conflict. And I'd better, if I want to be a part of the group at this point, I'd better just watch. But I remember now I could put it in words, but it was perhaps the first time that I really had to look at myself and look at a situation and sort of know it didn't seem right, but well, all right, I guess I'm going to have to adapt. So very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering when you perhaps, what, you know, was there an instance where you really realized that, wow, this is a different circumstance and I'm going to have to adapt here?
Well, I would, I can think of several, but I think the one that required the most immediate and dramatic response on my part was I was heading up a large project in the Middle East, and I was a subcontractor to one of the largest consulting firms, and I got a signal early on that there might be a difficulty because there was a gentleman assigned to the team who, it seems to me, was clearly not interested in having a woman lead the team. And, you know, this was likely to be a problem. And I mentioned that, you know, I thought this was going to be a problem. And I was assured, don't worry, you know, we'll back you. Everything will be fine. So I took off for the Middle East and the client there, about 6 months, 12 or 8 months in, was getting very upset because there were things that were supposed to be being done that required it to be done from head office back in the United States that just weren't happening. And I was sending messages back, you know, saying, we need this, you know, this needs to happen. And finally, everything came to a head, and they sent someone out from the head office who told the client that the problem was it was all my fault that I hadn't been doing my job, which was a result that, since I knew I was doing my job, I had never, ever encountered this before, that someone would just lie outright and put the blame on me. And so they didn't remove me right away, but they replaced me and kind of pushed me off to the side. And there were a number of quite humiliating consequences. And then they called me back to the U.S. and they formally fired me. I was just, Steve, I was completely bewildered by this. And I was also in a situation where I was financially strapped. I didn't know what in the world I would do. And into that came an invitation to move to Canada and do some work for the Canadian government. And so this is something I had never anticipated, moving in that way. And I ended up emigrating to the United States, and the rest is history, as they say. But it was a huge change. And, you know, having to adapt and having to deal also with the feeling that somehow I had done something wrong, you know,
yeah.
When I knew intellectually I hadn't, I was being made the scapegoat. And people who knew my work in the Middle East would take me aside and try to reassure me, but they couldn't speak out publicly. So there was this public humiliation going on, and then the private, you know, it's not you, it's not you. So that, I think, was the biggest, the most challenging adaptation I've had to make.
And I'm hearing almost an inner adaptation that has to happen as well. You know, there was a lot of processing, I'm sure, that you had to go through on a personal level and then see what you could do on a professional level. But then also created opportunity, right, to move to a new country, which also makes me think of migration, you know, to move to a new country. And you've worked globally so much, my goodness, to have to adapt to so many different cultures and languages and ways in which, you know, you may be received or different. Is in that case, talk about needing to adapt. But it also makes me think of humanity right now. There's just migration around the planet like never before. So it seems we're all being really called to adapt, and that idea of, you know, very different cultures. So we have to go to a break, but perhaps a few more words right when we get back, because it's difference. You know, we not only different situations, but we see differences amongst ourselves, and we have to learn to adapt. And how do we do that and still coexist without being competitive or being, you know, creating harm in any way to ourselves or others? So all wonderful ponderings. So we're going to go to a break, Dorothy. We'll be back, listeners, in a second.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Demystifying the Journey on From Here to There Radio with your host, Diane Garris. Tune in every third Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As Diane helps you get from where you are now to the life you envision, get ready to get unstuck and move forward. Every show features a new special segment, New Age Notes, demystifying hot metaphysical topics of the day. For more information or to work with Diane, visit DianeGarris.com.
Are you ready to attract abundance, release stress, look and feel younger, all from your smartphone? Get Pure Light, a free mobile app with audios that transmit powerful frequencies to shift anything in your life. Created by some of the world's top energy healers, these audios have created miracles, often quickly. Enjoy the latest in conscious technology and download Pure Light today. To find out more, visit purelightaudio.com.
Charlene Hess is a redheaded powerhouse of energy, love, and light. As a hairstylist, personal trainer, and life coach, she empowers people to develop a deeper connection with themselves mentally, emotionally, and physically. Join Charlene the third Friday of each month on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Get ready to experience your highest self, find your purpose, and discover your calling. You too can become unstoppable, shining your light and sharing your gift. Visit Charlene at charlenehess.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. We're continuing our discussion on the importance of adaptability. Before we go any further, Dorothy, let's talk a little bit about our endeavor that is Spirit Fire Radio. We are two different organizations that came together, right, and have adapted and
yes,
and created this season of radio shows called Spirit Fire Radio. So, Dorothy, a bit about the School for Esoteric Studies.
Yes, listeners, I'm with the School for Esoteric Studies. We provide training for persons who have a spiritual practice that they want to deepen. We do it through meditation, study, and service. And you can find out more about the training we provide at esotericstudies.net. You can also find out about the different initiatives that we have, the different group initiatives. And one of them is intentional collaboration with like-minded organizations. And we are absolutely delighted to have this collaboration with Spirit Fire. So once again, our website is esotericstudies.net.
Wonderful and beautiful website, listeners. Lots of really incredible information if you'd like to peruse that site. We are at spiritfire.com. I am here on behalf of Spirit Fire, which is also an educational nonprofit. And our mission is to educate people on the importance of spirituality and show them ways to integrate awareness and consciousness and spirituality into their everyday lives. We mainly do that through meditation. We've got our own meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness. It's an online practice, and we do meditation retreats to support that practice. We've got a retreat center in Western Massachusetts. We also do online classes, so you could find out more about all of that at spiritfire.com. So, Dorothy, we're going to move on and move this conversation along and talk a little bit about the ways in which adaptability relates to the other principles that we've talked about thus far. But I just wanted to also point out, we made reference to this last month, that the first many principles governed our reality. These were principles that governed our reality, such as interconnectivity and participation, nonlinearity, and duality. Non-duality. I've done that several times, right? It's a Whereas now we've moved on to principles that govern how we coexist. You know, so we coexist as a result of interdependence, and we coexist through adaptability, which makes sense, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, if we look a little bit deeper in each of those principles, for example, how does adaptability relate to interconnectivity? Well, our universe and ourselves are comprised of energy waves. We usually don't think of that. We think of ourselves as being solid matter, but that's not actually our reality. We're not a static set of particles, even though we believe we experience ourselves that way. And so we are part of what makes up the Earth, the biosphere, the living biosphere of the Earth, which is highly resilient in itself and adapts continuously to try to make up for what it is we're doing that is problematic. You know, it adjusts the what's happening in the air, what's happening in the water, to make the environment livable for us. And if you think of the complexity of that adaptation process, there's 10 million or more connected living species here on Earth, each of which has their own way of going about things. I'm just glad I'm not the Earth having to think about how to coordinate all of that and make sure to adapt in ways that will work for everyone.
Yeah, you think of it, it's in pretty high gear, in pretty high adaptation gear, right, all the time.
Absolutely.
Especially with us, with human beings, you know, with really so much willpower, you know, and the capacity to affect so much change. But it makes me think of, you know, when you say there's 10 million or more connected living species on the planet, wow, I mean, that means, you know, we've just got to get more and more curious, and we've got such a short time here. And so discovery is so important, you know, to learn about the Earth, to learn about our relationship to the Earth, to learn about the effect of our thoughts and words and action that has not only on, you know, our personal relationships on people, but on the world, on the environment, on other life forms. So it seems, you know, that this sense of interconnectivity is really bedrock. I mean, that is foundational. Once you really understand that it is factual, that we are interconnected, we are part of a greater one life, you don't live in a vacuum. And when you then start to make decisions based on the effect that those decisions have on others and on the world at large, you're really flexing your adaptability muscles right there.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, while I find it, I don't always keep it in mind in my own life, one of the things that can help us is recognizing that we do have the ability to adapt, and sometimes when we're forced to adapt, like what I was describing for myself, what it actually does is it opens up new opportunities. You know, I look back, Steve, I don't know about other people, but I look back, I've had a number of, you know, really challenging crises in my life. And I look, and at the time, I just found them so difficult, you know, and so painful. But I look back and I see how each time in my needing to, the choices that I made in adapting, I actually opened up new windows, so to speak, for myself. And my life has been much, much richer as a result.
Mm, yeah. And I even think of the situation that I mentioned with sort of outing myself, if you will, in front of my neighbors, mm-hmm. and really coming to know that I in fact was different. It was in choosing, you know, to be a part of the group and then take my time to learn to be cooperative. But I also learned so much about myself and my differences, but also my similarities. And as I grew and stayed friends with everybody in my neighborhood and got to know who I was, and there was a time and a place for me to come into being my own being. But as a result of the difference, or even as a result of the challenges or the contrast, you know, that's how we grow. We often will grow. But if we can always be able to step back and say, it's factual that we are all interconnected, then mm-hmm. within those contrasts and conflicts, we can find ways, you know, to see beyond our differences and see that growth, it can be for not only our own personal growth, but for the growth of everybody involved, to adapt and to learn and to discern, to assess and observe that hopefully in the end, we all learn a thing or two about ourselves, about our differences.
Mm.
Wonderful.
And I think this relates particularly to the non-duality principle, in that, you know, the dualistic perspective of life, which is so ingrained in our media, in our politics, you know, so many areas of our life, that there's one right way, you know, my way's right, your way's wrong, rather than, you know, that there are many different ways of approaching something. There are many different possible positive outcomes. And, you know, if we're going to live interconnected and with respect for each other, then we have to recognize that there is more than one way of viewing the world, more than one set of priorities.
Well, it also makes me think of the concept of participation. We spent a month on that topic. And what came forward to me in that is that we create our own reality. We are billions of human beings thinking thoughts, acting upon them, and creating their own reality. And so we are creating reality here on Earth. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we are participating in the creation of our own reality, but so is everybody else. And so, you know, we've got to realize that there's not only more than one way, there are many, many, many ways. And if you can celebrate that diversity, you know, if you can celebrate the many different ways that we approach it and see it all as facets sort of one, you know, sort of diamond, if you will, then, you know, we're cooking with gas. It's that, you know, it's we've got to do it together in the end, at the end of the day, through understanding our interconnectivity.
Well, you know, that reminds me of one of the misinterpretations of a basic law of the universe, the law of attraction. People often simplify it to, you know, well, all I have to do is say what I want and want it strongly enough and it's going to come to me. Just think of millions of people sitting around each saying, this is what I want and it's going to come to me. And they're all wanting different things, right? Different outcomes.
Yeah, yeah.
So how's that going to get sorted out? You know, how are we going to find ways to make a life that works for everyone instead of saying, no, it's only going to work for us and you're excluded, you're outside.
Yeah. And I sense that we'll talk a bit. I'd love to at some point in this month talk a bit about that misconception of the law of attraction, because I find so much of it has to do with adaptability. It has to do mm-hmm. with intention in terms of what it is I would like to see, and then allowing that to come to fruition in ways that sort of requires us to be adaptable, because there are so many people at all mm-hmm. times creating. But Dorothy, listen, we're already at another break, but I want to come back to these other principles. So let's just take a quick break and pick up where we left off right when we come back.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you. Discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion, Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Introducing New Soul Science, an introductory course with Ruby Betty, offering profound wisdom alongside radically simple concepts and techniques that collapse time, allowing instantaneous personal transformation. The foundational techniques of this introductory course reveal the profound inner ability each human has to access and fulfill their individual soul script or soul promise. Awakening this ability leads to the mastery of one's destiny. The concepts are totally original, immensely powerful, and completely revolutionary. They ignite an infinite fire within each listener, fueling one's ability to live out their unique soul promise. Are you ready to become more aware and access amazing personal transformation? This course is available now at rubybetty.co.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
Do you believe you are meant to live with more joy, but you're just not sure how to get it? What does the phrase, "give me the joy," make you feel? Join me, Lynn Horde, every second and fourth Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, on the Give Me The Joy Show, as I take you on a journey to peel back the layers so you can take back your joy. To find out more about my work as the Joy Coach, including my popular programs, Joy School and Joy at Work, visit lynnhorde.com.
Welcome back, listeners. Just before the break, we were talking about the different principles that we've talked about thus far and how they relate to adaptability. Dorothy, there was one more that you wanted to mention.
Well, we didn't really talk about interdependence, which was our topic last month, Steve. And I think there's an aspect of the relationship between adaptability and interdependence that that deserves our attention. And that is that one of the ways in which we manage interdependence is by using adaptability to manage boundaries. You know, it's, I think of, for example, where I live, there is active wildlife. You know, there are cougars that come through, there are bears, and we have to find ways to make sure that the humans have safe space and the other species also have safe space, as opposed to it being just one or the other. So figuring out how to adapt so that we're not just making it human only or human centric space, but that it actually works for species as well.
And it can help so much to understand this principle of interdependence. It actually fosters a desire to be more adaptable, to be more flexible, because it offers us, you know, it's factual, so that it sets up a goal of sorts, you know? Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have, you know, you were mentioning migration earlier, Steve. You know, we seem to, with all of the other political issues going on, we seem to be losing track of the immigrant children at the southern border of the United States. There's thousands of them that are still in custody of, you know, away from their parents, in custody of the U.S. government. And a whole bunch of them have been moved out into this tent city in the desert. They're out there. They don't have the normal supports of education, of health, of mental health supports, all of which they're entitled to by law,
and family.
And somehow the system is being quite rigid as opposed to adaptable, you know, in terms of the way in which this is being approached. Because of seeing it, and this relates back to the non-duality, seeing those children as them, you know, not part of us. And I really believe that if any of the politicians responsible were to go to one of those tent cities and think about their own children living there, that there's no way that they would tolerate those conditions.
Well, it brings to mind the other principle that we actually didn't mention, which is non-linearity, because what you see is such linear thinking. You know, it is so restrictive. You know, this situation is so much more complex than it is being presented to most, or than it is even than most people are realizing. You know, it there's like this directive, and you know, the world is much more complex. And we get this idea in mind politically, this is what we're going to do and this will be the result. And all of these lives are affected by it, but it's this narrow thinking, it's this linear thinking that doesn't allow, you know, people's, you know, these children to be even to be considered and what they're going through. Mm-hmm. Indeed, you just can see the rigidity, lack of flexibility. It's just initiative.
Right.
And it's the me, it's a selfish, you know, very narrow, self-serving in terms of national needs, so they say, you know, and not thinking of, again, the greater good. So it's a national ego consciousness as opposed to an international group consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also can, you know, we may want to just retain one way of being, one way of life, but technology is sure speeding up in terms of the changes that are being forced on us, or can be embraced by us. There's in some of the professions where it used to be that you studied for the profession, you did a little bit of professional, you know, continuing education, but basically you were fine. They're saying now that the half-life of the knowledge that's needed is about 18 months. The technology is changing that rapidly, and then what you know is basically obsolete. So this whole ability to adapt to what is new and you know, what's coming is something that's going to be even more important for us.
And even to be able to adapt to the effects of technology, you know, we've got to learn the new technologies, but I think we're all coming to see that there are some very negative effects to our addictions to social media, and we're seeing the impact that technology, really new technologies and a streamlined way of living, is having upon youth. I've got an 18-year-old nephew, and goodness, the way he has grown up as a result of technology is very different than myself, and there are certain aspects of life that I sense, you know, he's missing out on a bit and is going to have to adapt in the long run. I mean, that's my own, that's of course my judgment, but it is really interesting the hold that social media and technology has on on our youth, and you see that the world is having to adapt to certainly this new phenomenon of social media. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, we're one of the learnings is that if we are adaptable, if we are flexible, we can move through a number of changes in a way that feels positive, exciting. You were talking about curiosity, you know, all of that. But if we hang on to old ways of doing things, what we're doing is we're creating stress for ourselves.
Yeah, right? That definition of sanity, right, Dorothy, to do the same thing again and again and again and expect a different outcome, right?
Right.
It makes me think of a bit of the there's a Chinese proverb, and it's also linked to the Tao, that says the wise adapt themselves to circumstances as water molds itself to the pitcher.
Ooh, lovely image.
Within the practice of living awareness, you know, we have a whole step within the meditation practice that is softening, opening, and receiving, and softening, opening, and releasing. So this idea of softness, and within the practice, I'll often read a chapter from the Tao. Would you mind if I read it?
Please do.
It's about water. It says, water is fluid, soft, and yielding, but water will wear away rock, which is rigid and cannot yield. As a rule, whatever is fluid, soft, and yielding will overcome whatever is rigid and hard. And so that goes on to talk about being a leader and needing to yield and absorb and let go. But in the instance you were talking about with the children at the border, you know, we don't see this flexibility of seeing the needs of children, and that maybe a directive did not work and didn't serve the greater good, or even serve, you know, the masses, what the ways in which America would like to be represented and would like choices made on their behalf by politicians. And, you know, that if soft and yielding will wear away, you know, that mm-hmm. that it is. Rigidity will snap. It's like the tree that won't bend. So adaptability has so much to do with softness and openness mm-hmm. and your ability to receive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that relates back for me, to curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. To wondering, to seeing that there are many options and being open to understanding them.
It brings to mind resilience too. I wonder, you know, just to spend a minute talking about resilience, because, you know, there's to be adaptable is very important. And it says that we can adapt to a new situation, but we've got to have that ability, you know, within the process to stay resilient, to stay effective, to stay centered, mm-hmm. to stay, you know, vital. I think of the people affected by the recent flood. You know, mm-hmm. certainly you look at that situation and those who were able to adapt, those who were able to move with the changing situations were the ones that really, you know, fared best. You know, and you see the ones that come back and say, I've gotten through it before, I'm going to get through it again. There's a certain amount of optimism and hope that's necessary that then feeds our resilience. You know, it seems like adaptability and resilience, they really go hand in hand. I'm not sure if one feeds the other. They're components of the same process, perhaps.
Well, it's actually, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because it's an area that I've done some research in and just published an article, actually, in relation to work life. And, you know, what we can see is that the way to help people become more resilient is to increase their confidence in their ability to act and their willingness to take responsibility to act. So it's not just that they're you know, confident that they can act, but they're waiting for somebody else to do it for them. But they actually proactively initiate what needs to happen. It doesn't mean that what they do always works out, but it's that it's that belief that by moving forward, by trying something, I can make a difference. Mm. And it's that experimental mindset that I think is so so critical to adaptability.
Totally. And I love that you said that it might not always work out, but it's putting it in motion and feeling like you can respond then. Responsibility, right? The ability to respond, which requires adaptability. Dorothy, we're already at another break. I don't know how that happened, but
my goodness.
We're going to be back after these messages and continue the conversation on adaptability.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Ignite your inner magic on Grow Your Soul Radio with Jane Matanga. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Jane Matanga explores how to overcome your fears to help you gain the inspiration you need to awaken your path to joy. Learn the way to life mastery and the enlightened path with Grow Your Soul Radio. For more information on Jane Matanga and her work, visit enlightened-path.com.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day and then step back and see what happens? It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Would you like your next chapter to be free from fear and angst? Tune in to Your Next Chapter Radio, navigating through life's transitions with Shelley Ryan the fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shelley's contagious enthusiasm guides you through life's transitions deliberately, mindfully, and funnily. For Your Next Chapter coaching or to listen, visit YourNextChapterCoaching.com or call 602-617-8351. Next!
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I are going to continue the conversation on adaptability. Dorothy, I think it might be helpful if we just talk about some attributes that we could cultivate that would help us become more adaptable. Perhaps some, qualities of an adaptable person.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. I'd like to put it in a context for our listeners, which is, we can think of ourselves and other people as being on a continuum in terms of whether we resist change or we embrace change. And it may depend on the circumstance. And I just want to be really clear that I'm not advocating for being at the end of continuously embracing change, because newer is not necessarily better. And I think we'll get into that in some other weeks. But if we think about the characteristics or the attributes that we need if we are wanting to be adaptable, we've talked already about the willingness to experiment, the willingness to question, the ability to see opportunity where others are seeing only failure. So it's the glass half full rather than the glass half empty. Being resourceful, we talked about this a little bit when we talked about hope, Steve, you know, having contingency plans. If this doesn't work out, well, then let's try this. And if that doesn't work out, let's try this. That kind of thinking. Thinking ahead instead of focusing on what we can't change, but looking instead at what is possible. So all of this, you know, is, you know, are aspects of being aware of our environment, but also being aware of ourselves and using positive self-talk, because if I'm going to put myself in an experimental frame of mind, if I'm going to try things, only some of which will work out, then I have to see a failure as actually an opportunity to learn. Well, isn't that good? You know, there are sayings about the fact that if someone has never made a mistake, they didn't ever try anything. So using positive self-talk to say, well, isn't that great? I've learned that I don't want to do it that way. Now let's try something else. And being aware of the context that we're in, you know, what are the possibilities in relation to these other circumstances? So it's all about being, you know, open-minded. But at the end of the day, coming back to where I started, we have to be aware of our own values. We have to be aware of our internal moral compass, which we've talked about a lot on this show, of having a strong sense of what is and is not right, what is and what is not appropriate, so that we're not just, you know, leaves blowing around in the wind, but we're more like willow trees that can bend in the wind, but we've got our own roots.
I love willow trees. You know, as you were going through those qualities, you can just feel the expansion. You can feel how exciting life would be if we all approached every experience with that sort of openness and willingness. And I can hear a sense of wonder and discovery. You know, it's as if, listen, every moment is new. You know, the universe is expanding. It's a fact. And when we're in contraction and working against that, we feel it. So when we're actually allowing for the new at all times, I feel like we're doing this dance with the universe, which is always offering us opportunities for something new. But how will you roll with that? And to be honest, as you went through all of these qualities, I was thinking, you know, all you have to do is imagine that you are in a very busy parking lot and someone just took the space that you wanted. You know, how adaptable are you? You know, do you see it as an opportunity? Do you have a contingency plan? Are you up to date on changes that maybe there's a whole brand new lot that they just put in right beside the store? You know, there are so many ways that if we really do consider those qualities and integrate them into our experiences when we feel pushback from life, you know, when we feel, hey, this isn't quite what I expected, you know, what do I do now? Well, do I react and do I push back, or, you know, do I become engaged? Do I get curious? And have I sort of pre-paved my experiences with that, you know, that I will approach new experiences with a sense of wonder and curiosity and with flexibility and be willing to adapt? And what can I learn about myself in the process? So, you know, just, but, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to contribute an image. If people, I mean, people may or may not be aware of this, but it's an exercise that I learned in Tai Chi. I don't know if it's fundamental to Tai Chi, but it's called joint hands. Have you ever done it, Steve?
No.
If you stand with somebody and you put your, like, put your right foot right side by the other person's right foot, and then put your right hands, the back of your hands, together, and then start moving your hands in a circle, and try to push the other person off balance or have them push you off balance. And what you'll find is that as long as you go in a circular motion, as long as you keep that movement, you will stay steady. You will stay centered, but you're also moving, right? So it's that flexibility, that adaptability of being centered and adaptable at the same time. I just love that image.
And movement and motion. You know, it is really true that, if we were still, if really we just stagnate, you know, you start to waste away. You really need to keep in motion. And to be in motion and be focused on your capacity to adapt just makes life hopefully graceful, but it also makes life very interesting. I want to point out just before the show is over, I know in the many weeks to come, we will certainly talk about the personality or even the ego, and that would be the small e ego. Certainly in the wisdom teachings and ageless wisdom, sometimes we'll talk about a capital E ego, which is talking about the soul, but the ego in terms of the personality, and which is often defaults to preservation of the self and identifying with the self and its relationship to the soul, which really identifies to that sense of interconnectivity and, to simplify it, to say group. So I look forward, Dorothy, to that conversation. But what's interesting is one change that's happening for us all, as a cosmos, is that astrologically we're moving into the Aquarian age. You know, you might have heard the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And many would say that we're really approaching, not being on the dawn of it, but being really in the age of Aquarius, which is going to last for some 2,600 years by some accounts. But I love this image. I was told this, and this image was painted in my mind, that the Piscean age that we're leaving could be situated like almost like a corporate table with the CEO at the head of the table and all of the workers around the CEO. So there's a leader or a guru, and then the followers who are learning, who are maybe subservient or higher. It's hierarchical in a way. But as we move toward the age of Aquarius, it's more of a round table where everybody plays an equal part, and we're all there to offer our input and rely upon each other equally. So that sounds very exciting. Certainly the age of the Piscean age served its purpose, but we really are moving into this new paradigm of the round table and of trying to see ourselves, as we're doing on this show, trying to bring forward the ways in which we can cooperate and be equals and coexist. And wow, certainly being adaptable helps in a round table discussion. Necessary. You will.
That's true. And I think it's interesting in the Ageless Wisdom that, there are passages about how important it is that a group is comprised of people with different experiences, at different levels of spiritual development, because of their ability to contribute their unique perspective. The caution I'd like to throw out, though, Steve, because I've just my partner and I have just been in a professional situation where this came up, is where people equate that kind of group work with assuming a completely blank slate. Like nobody, there's no expertise, right? And
yes.
This is part of what is going on with the Trump administration, right? The scientists don't matter. There's nothing that, we can say whatever we want and make that the truth. So it's important that we also recognize that each of us has expertise to contribute. It's not that expertise doesn't exist, but that we can share that and we can come to something that is greater than each of us individually.
Yes, it is a united effort and part. Dorothy, we are absolutely at the end of this first show. It went so fast, I hope, because it was just so juicy for us all. It was a lovely conversation, Dorothy. Thank you. And listen, we will be back next week. We're going to talk about the process of adaptation and how we can streamline, make that easier for ourselves. We hope you'll join us next week. Thanks, Dorothy, and thanks, listeners.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.